When you look at the greatest moral initiatives of our time, the sanctuary movement, LGBTQI plus equality, economic justice, reproductive rights, and the list goes on, you won't have to look long before you find noteworthy contributions from my next guest. The author of 38 books, the Reverend Dr. Donna Scopper, is stepping down after 15 years as senior minister at Judson Memorial Church in New York, but characteristically is calling this a rewirement rather than a retirement. Now, with that in mind, I am delighted to have this opportunity to welcome her back to State of Belief Radio. Donna, thank you for being with us again.
It's my pleasure. I'm so glad you invited me.
Why now? What prompted you to take this step now?
Just a wonderful sense of completion at Judson. I felt that my work was done, or at least done enough that others could take over and handle it. But also COVID did to me what it does to everybody. It forces you into this deep reckoning with yourself. And I suppose if there's a sidebar to it, I was so reconvinced about racism being the central question of the land. Mm-hmm. And a sin for which we have not fully repented. And I was a little tired of being in a really deep blue congregation where everybody agreed with me about that. And Judson has had the luxury of becoming more integrated in the last couple of decades. And so we're actually doing some remarkable inner work about becoming less of a white congregation and more of an integrated congregation. And the leadership was in place to do that. And we're also blessed with extraordinary queer leadership, extraordinary young women's leadership, et cetera. And I couldn't figure out what an experienced old white woman was doing there anymore. So I thought, maybe you could have another challenge and find a way to live in a more purple environment and be challenged by it, learn from it, and figure out how did President Trump happen? What drove that? Can it happen again? And I'm actually fairly good at turning congregations around. I'm a turnaround specialist, it appears, with seven behind me. And I thought, well, maybe I've got the energy at 74 to do one more. So that's the complex reasoning.
How has the landscape for public ministry and social justice activism changed through these 15 years? And how is New York City different today?
I think that New York has always been at the forefront of multiple movements and always been a place where land and place and real estate mattered fundamentally. The one project I'm taking with me is a project called Bricks and Mortals, which has to do with more place-based, locally engaged, adaptive reuse of sacred sites, places where people can gather. That's really been the secret to Judson's success, that it kept the doors wide open and it used every closet and every corridor and every room to allow people to come together. And public ministry, I think, is even more dependent in the age of, I call it Zumbaya, more dependent on places where people can do self-governance and gather as the prelude to genuine democracy. So the way I would put it is, I'm not against community organizing at all. I think it's fundamental. But I think that younger, especially queer people who are so magnificently creative and involved in all the movements are showing us a way to be communal in other ways and getting that big word intersectionality. It's much too big and it's not a pretty word. The way the exhaustion of masculinity, and therefore the exhaustion of stereotypical notions of femininity, are underneath all this insecurity that drives injustice. And I don't mean to psychoanalyze so much as to say that if we can learn from not only our own experience, but each other's experience, things could get really interesting really quick. Yeah. And add to that the fact that I don't think race. I was just talking with an interracial couple yesterday doing premarital counseling. And I said, so what do you think is going to happen to your interracial child? And they both said, oh, she's going to be fine. They're going to be fine. And I said, what makes you think it's going to change? And they said, because number one, we don't allow people to mess with us. But number two, the population is going to tip. And the old angry people are just not going to have a constituency. That we're in the last gasps. And I think that could be true.
Well, let me personalize now at this point, Donna. How have you been changed by these years of pastoral ministry and activism?
So in my final sermon at Judson, I said, I call it farewell. And fair means journey, but it also means the cost of the trip. How did you fare? Was the food expensive? Was, you know, the lodging decent? And what does wellness mean? And fair, I said, I gave everything I had to Judson Memorial Church. And I used five metaphors. One was, I made quadruple the return on my investment. It was like going to show up for a bus and thinking you're going to have to grab a cab, but every time you needed a bus, one just arrived. New leadership emerged. I felt that I was at a constant feast. And not that everything we did turned to gold, but that everything we did multiplied its power by virtue of the participation of those who were there. So I called it my investment, my risky investment, my needing a bus, my being a bus driver that nobody threw up on and everybody thanked all day long. I had just these kind of, I just felt so blessed by Judson. Yeah. And so probably what changed for me is I finally found some people who I could really cook with.
Yeah.
Because I had been in purple congregations, and they always thought I was too radical, and Judson always thought I was too conservative.
Could you identify one program or achievement that you're the most gratified by?
I know that the ticket to our success at Judson, and emphasize our, was the community ministry program. And I'll tell you the story of it. When I got there, we had about 60 people. Nothing worked. I mean, we were down to one bathroom that functioned. And I said to the board, I got to have an intern. I got to have somebody. I have to work with somebody. So we put a note out at Union Seminary, and we got, I think it was 6 or 7 applications. And I jokingly said to a woman named Peggy Halsey, who was on the board and running the search for the intern, said, Peggy, they're all so good. I think we should hire all of them. And she said, let's do it. And so we hired them. And from that, and through the generosity of the Carpenter Family Foundation, we had 15 years of 14 cohorts of community ministers, and they turned the place around. And they did it by being a group of young people that you'd see when you came in, so young people didn't feel like surrounded by their grandparents. They did it by being absolute brilliant soldiers in Occupy, in Sanctuary, in Bricks and Mortals, in Reproductive Rights, in Queer, in Arts. They did it. And we graduated 109 people from that program. And one of my friends says that they were scopperized. And I think that's a terrible word for it. But what we really did was imitate group learning every Friday afternoon for 3 hours and had the best conversations. And then we went back to work. So we had an army.
Yeah. You have worked with so many seminarians or ordained so many future leaders during your time at Judson. What inspires you about the people being called to ministry today?
They're really honest. They don't want any BS. They really can't. They can smell an instrument or an ad a mile away. And they'd rather hear bad news than false news. And I've often mused on, you know, a lot of us in our generation make fun of the language spiritual, but not religious, right?
Yeah.
I have learned not to make fun of it, but to say, what you're saying is you don't want to lie about God.
Yeah.
And you don't want to say words that don't mean anything. And I think that's really beautiful.
Oh, I do too. Yeah, and you've said it well, Donna. Your next book is titled "Remove the Pews." I'd love to hear something about that book and this movement.
Well, all right. It's obviously a joke. I mean, it's not to be taken literally. Although we have been removing pews around the country because in our organization, Bricks and Mortals. And the reason is that when you remove the pews, you can use the sacred space 7 days a week, and you can set for a big group or a small group or a concert or a dance. My favorite program at Judson was the Morning Glories, where 500 kids who wanted to dance sober would show up at 7 a.m. and dance their heads off for 2 hours. If the pews were there, they couldn't do that, right? And so many of our good programs had to do with harm reduction. But what's beautiful about our space is how empty it is. But if you want to set the room for 35 people in the middle of the room, you can set it. It doesn't mean you don't sit down, but you can use the space in lots of different ways. And what I really mean in the book, removethepews.com, is you got to get that rigidity out of our theology, as well as out of our buildings.
So, rewirement, not retirement. You've mentioned a little of what's coming. Talk about what else you're planning to do next, if you would.
I'm going to do three things. I'm going to be the half-time, part-time pastor where I am right now at the Orient Congregational Church on the east end of Long Island, the oldest congregational church in New York State, 300 years. We were just at the bank this morning trying to talk Chase into getting us a new checking account. And every time we plugged in the 1840, they said, the computer said, no, 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 that we couldn't get the account. And it's a congregation in a, like every other place in the entire country, is rapidly changing. It's run by quite a few lesbian couples and quite a few farmers. And there's a huge influx of urban exiles out to this beautiful strip on the North Fork. It's not the South Fork. That's where all the rich people go. The North Fork is a little different. And I've always wanted to come out here. I had a church in Riverhead for nearly a decade, and I fell in love with this place. So I'm going to be doing that. And I wouldn't call them a turnaround because they've never been very big. You know, it's just it's an interesting place. But we're already at work on big houses and limiting lot size for all these McMansions coming out here, called the Big House Movement. I'm going to continue teaching at Hartford Seminary, where I've been teaching for 7 or 8 years. And I was teaching in the Doctor of Ministry program, but unfortunately they killed that program. So now I'm teaching in the chaplaincy program. And half of the people I'm teaching are Muslims, which is fascinating to me. So it's really a wonderful place for. The other thing I love about this coming generation is how automatically interfaith they are.
Yeah.
They have absolutely no allegiance to one brand of religion, and they think God is larger. And then I'm going to be working in these five cities, reproducing the Judson model of hyperuse of sacred space.
Hmm.
Plugging into a new energy source is what it means.
Yeah.
Judson was a great energy source for me. And when it was complete, it was complete. And I'm looking for some new energy sources.
Reverend Dr. Donna Scopper is a prolific author, an inspired preacher, and a powerful voice for justice and moral inclusivity, who's been tireless in her activism for as long as I've known her. Donna, thank you so much for taking the time, and I hope we can continue it on State of Belief Radio.
I hope so, too. It's wonderful to see you.